We can still see on social media the claim that there are 30 Qurans in existence, or there are many, many Qurans. We don't have a single Quran that goes back to the time of the companions and the prophet. And I thought I'd just briefly share with you two views, one from a top Islamic scholar who lives in the West, and secondly, to share with you the consensus of Western Orientalist specialists on the Quran, just to see if this is really true. Is it the case, as missionaries and atheists at Speaker's Corner and online claim, that there are many, many Qurans, and this is just a myth that there's a single Quran that Muslims still have today from the beginning? So I just wanted to share with you some words from Abdul Halim, his book Understanding the Quran, Themes and Style. He is professor of Islamic Studies at SOAS, that's the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London. He's one of the world's top Arabic specialists in the Arabic Quran. And he produced a wonderful translation into English of the Quran for Oxford University Press, which I highly recommend. So he gives a bit of background to how we got what's called the Uthmanic Codex, the Uthmanic book. How did that come about? And then I'm going to go on to Western Orientalist scholars to see if they agree with the Muslim position. So he says on page 4, during the second year after the Prophet's death in 633, and following the Battle of Yamama, in which a number of those who knew the Quran by heart had died, it was feared that with the gradual passing away of such men, there was a danger of some Quranic material being lost. Therefore, the first caliph, Abu Bakr, ordered that the Quran should be collected in one written copy, which was kept with him. This copy remained locked away until the time of Uthman, the third caliph, when a problem arose, and this is a key point. The urgency is summarized in the appeal of Hudayfa bin al-Yaman, who demanded of Uthman, on returning from battles in Azerbaijan in 645, quick, help the Muslims before they differ about the text of the Quran, as the Christians and Jews differed about their scriptures. Hudayfa had become perturbed when he saw Muslim soldiers from different parts of Syria and Iraq meeting together and differing in their readings of the Quran, each considering his reading to be the correct one. The only full official written copy had been kept first with Abu Bakr and then with Umar, and after his death with his daughter Hafsa, a widow of the Prophet. Responding to the urgent demand for help, Uthman sent word to Hafsa, asking for the copy in her possession to be sent to him. He ordered that a number of copies be made and distributed to different parts of the Muslim world as the official copy of the Quran. So it's a really important point here. He ordered that a number of copies be made and sent to different parts of the world as the official copy. And he sent reciters, by the way, with them, we know from the sources. So it wasn't just the text, it was how to recite it as well. This prevented the possibility, says the author, of different versions evolving in time, as Hudayfa had originally feared. This prevented the possibility of different versions evolving in time, as was the fear. The Uthmanic Codex, or book, has remained the only canonical text of the Quran that exists, recognized by Sunnis and Shia alike throughout the Muslim world for the last 14 centuries. So there is only one Quran. It's accepted by everyone. Okay, that's the claim. And this guy, as I say, is a top expert, a professor of Islamic studies at the University of London. He's a Muslim. So maybe he's a bit biased. Maybe other scholars who are not Muslim will give a different picture. So let's turn to them and back to this, the Cambridge Companion to the Quran. Now, I mentioned this book before in a previous video. It's published by Cambridge University Press. And you can see on the back cover in the contents some of the West's leading experts on the Quran or professors at universities have contributed to this volume. So if you're interested in the Western scholarly position and view on the Quran, this is worth reading. These are not believers, of course. They don't believe the Quran is the word of God. So in a chapter by Angelica Newworth, page 100, she gives the Western academic consensus on this subject. And she says, in quite academic language, "The theories of the so-called skeptic or revisionist scholars who, arguing historically, make a radical break with the transmitted picture of Islamic origins, shifting them in both time and place from the 7th to the 8th or 9th century, and from the Arabian Peninsula to the Fertile Crescent, have now by now been discarded, though many of their critical observations remain challenging and still call for investigation." So the radical views are from the 1970s and 80s, really, which challenge the traditional picture, which I've quoted from the Muslim scholar there, have now been discarded. They're no longer accepted. They've been tested and tried and found wanting. She continues, "New findings of Quranic text fragments, in other words, manuscripts, moreover, can be adduced to affirm, rather than call into question, the traditional picture of the Quran as an early fixed text composed of the surahs we have." So she's making an interesting point that we have, especially in recent years, discovered a wealth of earlier and earlier Quranic manuscripts. Famously, of course, the one in Birmingham University, the Quranic manuscript there, which is dated by scholars to the time of the Sahaba themselves. So this is within the lifetime of people who knew Muhammad. And that manuscript is the same as today's manuscript. It's this one Quran. And finally, she says, "Nor have scholars trying to deconstruct that image through linguistic arguments succeeded in seriously discrediting the genuineness of the Quran as we know it," end quote. So there we have it, both the traditional Muslim view, but represented in a way by Abdul Halim, and Western scholars now agree that there is one Quran. We have it today. It's the same Quran as we find in the earliest Muslim community. So the dogmatic hysteria and attempts to destroy Islam by missionaries and some atheists is without foundation if you look at the scholarly and academic research. So I just thought I'd share that with you. Until next time.